childhood dread stirred Fuchs into a frenzy of scientific curiosity. "Come on," Fuchs said, ducking past the hatch. "We've got to suit up and go outside." Dan nodded his agreement and followed the scientist. "He's forgotten about zero-G," Dan realized. "He's not worried about upchucking now. He's got too much work that he wants to do." Amanda remained on the bridge as Pancho followed Dan down to the airlock. "You're not thinking of going EVA, are you?" she asked Dan. "I've been a qualified astronaut since before you were born, Pancho." "You've been redlined. You can't go outside. And rain makes applesauce." "I mean it, Dan," Pancho said, quite seriously. "Your immune system can't take another radiation dose." "Fuchs can't go out there by himself," he countered. "That's my job. I'll go with him." "Nope. You stay here. I'll babysit him." "I'm the captain of this craft," Pancho said firmly. "I can order you to stay inside." He gave her a crooked grin. "And I'm the owner. I can fire you. Not till we get back to Selene." Dan huffed out an impatient sigh. "Come on, Pancho, stop the chicken shit. Your medical records say..." "Damn it all to hell and back, I don't care what the medical records say. I'm going out. I want to see this sucker, touch her with my own hands." "No gloves?" They had reached the airlock where the spacesuits hung in racks like suits of armor on display. Fuchs was sitting on the bench that ran in front of the racks, already into the lower half of his suit, sealing the boots to the cuffs of his leggings. Dan reached for the suit that bore his name stenciled on its chest. "I thought you were scared of the radiation," Pancho said. "I'll be okay inside the suit," Dan said. "The weather's calm out there, no radiation storm." Fuchs looked up at them, said nothing. The regulations say you're not supposed to bring pets aboard," Dan said, grinning again as he pulled the lower half of his suit from its rack and sat down beside Fuchs. "But I've got to look into my shoes every morning to make sure your damn snake isn't curled up inside one of them." "Snake?" Fuchs yelped, looking alarmed. Pancho planted her fists on her hips and glared down at Dan for a long moment. Then she visibly relaxed. "Okay, boss," she said at last. "I guess I can't blame you. But I'm going to monitor your vitals back on the bridge. If I say come in, you come in. Right then. No arguments." "Agreed?"
"Agreed,"
Dan replied instantly. A voice in his head was laughing mockingly. "Are you satisfied?" the voice asked. "You've shown her that you're not a sick old man." "Big deal. How are you going to feel when the cold clamps down on you and your bones start hurting again?" "Doesn't matter," Dan answered himself. "I'm not going to stay cooped up in here like a cripple." "To hell with it. I don't really give a damn. If I've got to die, I'd rather wear out than rust out. What difference does it make?" "Clear for EVA," Amanda's voice came through the speaker in Dan's helmet. He was in the airlock, sealed in his suit, feeling like a robot in a metal womb. "Opening outer hatch," he said, pressing a gloved finger on the red light of the control panel. "Copy, outer hatch." The hatch slid open and Dan felt his pulse start to quicken. "How long has it been since I've been outside?" he asked himself. That sardonic voice in his head answered, "Not since he got the radiation overdose. Jiggering commsats in the Van Allen belt." 10 years, Dan realized. That's a long time to be away from all this. He pushed himself through the hatch and floated in emptiness. The universe hung all around him. Stars, solemn and unwinking, staring at him even through the heavy tinting of his fishbowl helmet. Turning slowly, he saw the sun, strangely small and pale, with its arms of faint zodiacal light outstretched on either side of it. Freedom. He knew he was confined inside the spacesuit, and he couldn't survive for a minute without it. Yet hanging there, weightlessly in the silent emptiness of infinity, Dan felt free of all the world, alone with the cosmos, in tune with the ethereal music of the spheres. Glorious freedom. Radiation be damned. He felt he could soar out into the universe forever and leave the petty lusts and hates of mankind far behind. It wouldn't be a bad way to die. Then the asteroid slid into his view. Massive, ponderous, an enormous, pitted, dark, looming reality hanging over him like an ominous cloud, a mountain floating free in space. Star Power 1 looked pitifully small and helpless alongside the 2-kilometer-long asteroid, like a minnow next to a whale. Dan suddenly understood how Jonah must have felt. "You can't scare me," he said to the asteroid. "You're 2 kilometers of high-grade iron ore, pal. You're gonna look beautiful to a lot of people on Earth. Money in the bank, that's what you are. Jobs and hope for millions of people. Bonanza. That's your name, and that's just what you are." "Ready for EVA?" Fuchs's voice broke into Dan's silent monologue. "Clear for EVA, Lars," he heard Amanda reply. Dan squeezed the right hand grip on his maneuvering controls with the lightest of touches. The cold gas jet on the backpack squirted noiselessly, and he turned enough to be looking back at the ship. Star Power 1 glinted nicely in the starlight. She still looked brand new, shining, not a pit or a scratch on her. The airlock hatch slid open, and a space-suited figure stood framed in it. "Exiting the airlock," Fuchs said, his voice trembling slightly. "Come on, Lars," Dan called. "Isn't she a beauty?" Fuchs jetted toward him. Dan saw that his suit was bristling with hammers and drills and all sorts of equipment. "It's enormous." He sounded awestruck. "She's just an average-sized chunk of metal," Dan said. "And as soon as you chip a piece off her, we can claim her." Fuchs showed no hesitation at all, although he seemed a bit clumsy working the controls of his maneuvering thrusters. For a moment, Dan thought he was going to ram into the asteroid, but at the last instant, Fuchs fired a braking blast and hovered a scant few meters above its pitted, pebbly surface. Dan jetted toward him, then, with a bare touch of the hand-grip controls, lowered himself to the surface of the asteroid. He felt his boots make contact and then recoil slightly away. Not much gravity, he thought, as he puffed down again and finally stood on the surface of Bonanza. Clouds of dust rose where his boots made contact with the surface. They just hung there, barely moving in the minuscule gravity. It took Fuchs 3 tries to get firmly onto the surface. He kept coming down too hard and bouncing off. In the end, Dan had to reach out and yank him down. "Don't try to walk," he told Fuchs. "The gravity's so light you'll float up and away." "Then how?" "Slide your boots along." Dan demonstrated a couple of steps, shuffling up even more dust. "Like you're dancing." "I don't dance very well," Fuchs said. "This isn't the smoothest dance floor in the solar system either." The asteroid's surface was rough and uneven, covered with a powdery coating of dust, much like the surface of the moon. Dan thought it was more like standing on the deck of a boat, though, than on solid ground. There wasn't really a horizon. The rock just ended. Pinhole craters peppered the surface. Pebbles and fist-sized rocks littered it, and out along its far end, Dan could see a more sizable crater. A big depression with a raised rim all around it. "How much iron do you think we've got here?" Dan asked. "We'll have a good measure of its mass by the time we return to the ship," Fuchs said. "With the ship orbiting the asteroid, we have a classic two-body system. It's simple Newtonian physics." Dan thought to himself, he's a scientist, all right. Ask him a simple question and you get a dissertation. Without the answer to your question. "Lars," he said patiently, "can't you give me some idea of this lump's mass?" Fuchs spread his hands. In the spacesuit, he looked like a bubble-topped fireplug with arms. "A back of the envelope.